Good morning and welcome. We greet you in the name of our worthy Creator. How many of you saw the sunrise this morning? Good. I'm glad to see that many hands up. I was in my study sort of going over, preparing for the message this morning, sort of going over the final round, and looked out the window to the west and saw, boy, it looks like there's a little bit of a reddish glow there. I wonder what's in the east. And there was just this fabulous sunrise, just beautiful. And so I'm glad that so many of you enjoyed it as well. Sorry for those who missed it. And then on the way to church this morning around 9 o'clock, I saw there's a mirage going. Did anyone else notice mirage this morning? Several hands. That's good. And I noticed when we were traveling here on Partridge Road, we could see south and see the wind turbines. I'm not sure how many miles away they are. Harper area. And it wasn't just the tips, it was almost the whole towers that you could see this morning. And so that was just a fascinating observation. That was good to see. That's not the subject this morning, but just an encouragement to look at the wonders that are around us on a daily basis. The creation of God speaks of His greatness, a small part of His greatness, but it does speak of His greatness. This morning I'd like to look at the ninth of the Ten Commandments, and that commandment is, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. And I've entitled the message, Speak Truth. Now, I notice this commandment, we can use it and just say, this is a command that says you are not to lie. And we can include that in here, but it's specifically not to bear false witness against your neighbor, not to speak falsely about someone who you come in contact with. And on Wednesday evening, we had some discussion about who is our neighbor. And it's the ones we meet. It's the ones we know and we come in contact with. And I think it applies to people who we only hear about as well. One of the foundations for a healthy community is trust. And when we start speaking falsely about people, that I think is one of the quickest ways of breaking down that foundation of trust that is so vital for a community to thrive and work together. I invite response. Why would people lie about each other? Why would someone bear false witness about someone else?
Envy.
Envy.
To further my own cause.
To further one's own cause. Making assumptions rather than knowing the whole truth. Good. The first two were actually two that are clearly stated in the book of James, where it talks about the tongue, and it talks about the worldly wisdom says where envy and strife is, or most translations give it as where there's bitter envy and selfish ambition, there is where you have all kinds of evil happening. And one of the results of that is this bearing false witness. And also in sort of making assumptions of something where we know only a part of. Now, I can be aware of a situation, and this is the way it is. And it may be accurate. But another person may come from a different angle and have a different perspective, and his perspective is accurate as well. And so let's remember that our own perspective is not always the only valid perspective, and that we don't make too many assumptions without knowing the complete story. And so I'd like to look at a few scriptures from the Old Testament that just talk about this thing of speaking falsely about people I'd like to progress on into what some of the New Testament scriptures are as well, and also include some illustrations and stories about false witnessing. In Exodus chapter 23, be reading verses 1 through 3 and 6 through 8. There it says, and I'm using the New King James Version here, "You shall not circulate a false report. Do not put your hand with the wicked to be an unrighteous witness. You shall not follow a crowd to do evil, nor shall you testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after many to pervert justice. You shall not show partiality to a poor man in his dispute. You shall not pervert the judgment of your poor in his dispute. Keep yourself far from a false matter. Do not kill the innocent and righteous, for I will not justify the wicked. And you shall take no bribe, for a bribe blinds the discerning and perverts the words of the righteous." So, clear teaching. For one, don't circulate a false report. If you hear a rumor, be careful about spreading it. Check it out. What is true? And even if it's true, it might not be necessary to spread it on to the next person. And I will just add this comment. I don't see this community as a community that thrives on or delighting in spreading rumors and gossiping. When there is wrongdoing, I don't see people just that's the theme, that everyone, it's on everyone's tongue. I don't see that, and I appreciate that. And I think when there is that lends itself to a level of trust, that when there is failure in some area, that there is a trust there that we can confess our wrong without it being over-dramatized. And so don't spread false reports. And then it also talks about not showing partiality. So often when we hear a situation, it's easy to take sides. Maybe the first report we hear, that sort of makes the impression, and that's our perspective. Well, there are other perspectives that can be correct as well. Don't show favoritism. And the book of James clearly speaks about the sin of partiality. It's not according to God's plan that we are partial. And then in the end here, it states clearly, don't take bribes. And it says, a bribe blinds the discerning and perverts the words of the righteous. When we start accepting, if someone comes to us, hey, I'll give you this if you take my side in this matter, and we start accepting bribes, it just takes away the foundation of truth, and we speak words that we should not, and we start showing partiality, and justice is not accomplished. Deuteronomy 19, verses 15 through 20. Deuteronomy 19, verse 15, this talks about when there is a false witness, what should be the punishment for that? Starting in 15, one witness shall not rise against a man concerning any iniquity or any sin that he commits. By the mouth of two or three witnesses, the matter shall be established. If a false witness rises against any man to testify against him of wrongdoing, then both men in the controversy shall stand before the Lord, before the priests and the judges who serve in those days. And the judges shall make careful inquiry. And indeed, if the witness is a false witness who has testified falsely against his brother, then you shall do to him as he thought to have done to his brother. So you shall put away the evil from among you. And those who remain shall hear and fear, and hereafter they shall not again commit such evil among you. The golden rule. As you want to do to others, that's the way it'll come back to you. And this is in the negative sense here. where if a falsehood is exposed, do to the false witness what he intended to do to the one he was falsely accusing. And it clearly says that should be a cure. If people are aware of this, that this is actually what will happen, it should sort of shut down the thing of false accusations. In the first part of that passage, it says, it's by two or three witnesses that a matter shall be established. Now, we also know that two or three people can get their heads together and agree to bear a false witness. And that has been accomplished. And we're not supporting that. But I think there is a lesson here that don't just take one person's word for something. Verify it with multiple sources to verify the truth of a matter. It's a story from the book, The Ten Tender Commandments by Ron Mill. And I'm going to go ahead and just read the story. This story has been given in I've heard different versions of it. Well, I had the marker in here. And you'll recognize similarities, for some of you at least, to the story. But as children grow up, I don't know if you've heard it or not, so I'll read the story here. It says, a middle-aged pastor in a small farming community in the Midwest had been falsely accused. It was a vicious, scandalous story, and it swept through town like a prairie fire. Have you heard about the pastor? Can you believe it? He ought to leave town. You'd never think such a thing to look at him, would you? Guess he had a lot of us fooled. His poor wife. After a period of time, however, the rumor was found to be just that, an ugly, empty rumor without any basis in fact. But the damage had already been done. Many people in the town had believed every word and were now reluctant to revise their opinions. There must have been some truth in it, or why would everybody be talking about it? Sometime later, the couple who had spread the false tale came under conviction of sin and went to the pastor to apologize. Confessing they had known the rumor to be false all along, they asked the offended man for forgiveness. Of course I will forgive you, he replied gravely. But could I ask you to do something for me, something that might seem rather strange at first? Relieved that the pastor was willing to forgive, the couple readily agreed to do whatever he asked. All right, he said, here is my request. I would like you to go home and butcher one of your chickens. Pluck out all of its feathers and put the feathers in a bag. Could you do that for me? They nodded yes, they could certainly do that. But it seemed so strange. Was the man asking for a chicken? Next, the pastor went on. I'd like you to go throughout the town and at each corner scatter some of the feathers. Just a few. From the bag. Then please take the remaining feathers and climb to the top of the old city water tower, you know, the one by the feed store, and scatter those to the wind. Could you do those things? They were mystified by this point, but nodded in the affirmative once again. Fine, the pastor said, just fine. The couple stood up to leave, but as they reached the door, he suddenly called them back. Oh, there's just one more thing, please. After you finish scattering all the feathers, I'd just like you to go back through town and gather them all up again, okay? Make sure that you pick up every one you've dropped and every one you've scattered to the winds and put them all back in the bag. Please be careful that none of the feathers is missing and bring the bag back to me. Could you do that for me? The couple just looked at him. Pastor, that's impossible. The wind will have blown them all over three counties by then. The pastor didn't say a word, and slowly the truth of his word picture began to dawn on the couple, and they hung their heads. Yes, they could be forgiven for their actions, but no one could undo the damage they had done by scattering their false and slanderous words. And just a vivid picture, you know, once The words are out of our mouths, the hurtful words that we give. Once they're out, they're out. We can repent, we can be sorry, and there's forgiveness, but we cannot undo all the damage that has been done. And so, we want to be careful with our words. One story that is true that happened locally over in East Eureka, where Alvin and Amy are living now, used to be a schoolhouse. And years ago, one of the boys decided he wants to play a little trick. And he put a firecracker in a chunk of wood. They used the wood stove to heat the schoolhouse. And so, what are firecrackers supposed to do when they go into the fire? They're supposed to make a bang. And so when the wood was put in the fire, the firecracker did its thing, and there was this bang. And the teacher wanted to know who did this. And there was sort of a scapegoat fella in that school who had a bit of a reputation for not being the best behaved student, you could say. And someone blamed him for doing it. And the teacher believed the report, gave him the punishment, sent him home for the rest of the day, where at home he received further punishment. And the one who actually stuck the firecracker in the piece of wood did not own up to it that it was him. There was a false report. It was a false witness. Now, the one who didn't confess to his actual deed, I don't know that he had malice in his heart. He wants to get the other person in trouble so much as he wanted to save his own hide. But it was a bearing false witness to a deed. And you know, that man to this day, there are feelings that come up when he recounts this story. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. Yes, there's forgiveness when we bear false witness. But it takes time for trust and for some of those hurts to go away. The third story I'd like to look at is in 1 Kings chapter 21. This is the story of Naboth. 1 Kings chapter 21, starting in verse 1. And it came to pass after these things that Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard which was in Jezreel, next to the palace of Ahab, king of Samaria. So Ahab spoke to Naboth, saying, "Give me your vineyard, that I may have it for a vegetable garden, because it is near, next to my house, and for it I will give you a vineyard better than it, or, if it seems good to you, I will give you its worth in money." But Naboth said to Ahab, "The Lord forbid that I should give the inheritance of my fathers to you." So Ahab went into his house, sullen and displeased because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. For he had said, "I will not give you the inheritance of my fathers." And he lay down on his bed and turned away his face and would eat no food. But Jezebel his wife came to him and said to him, "Why is your spirit so sullen that you eat no food?" He said to her, "Because I spoke to Naboth the Jezreelite and said to him, 'Give me your vineyard for money, or else, if it pleases you, I will give you another vineyard for it.' And he answered, 'I will not give you my vineyard.' Then Jezebel his wife said to him, 'You now exercise authority over Israel. Arise, eat food, and let your heart be cheerful. I will give you the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite.' And she wrote letters in Ahab's name, sealed them with his seal, and sent the letters to the elders and the nobles who were dwelling in the city with Naboth. She wrote in the letters, saying, 'Proclaim a fast, and seat Naboth with high honor among the people, and seat two men, scoundrels, before him to bear witness against him, saying, "You have blasphemed God and the king. Then take him out and stone him that he may die." So the men of his city, the elders and nobles who were inhabitants of his city, did as Jezebel had sent to them, as it was written in the letters which she had sent to them. They proclaimed a fast and seated Naboth with high honor among the people. And two men, scoundrels, came in and sat before him. And the scoundrels witnessed against him, against Naboth, in the presence of the people, saying, Naboth has blasphemed God and the king. Then they took him outside the city and stoned him with stones so that he died. Then they sent to Jezebel, saying, Naboth has been stoned and is dead. And it came to pass, when Jezebel heard that Naboth had been stoned and was dead, that Jezebel said to Ahab, Arise, take possession of the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite, which he refused to give you for money. For Naboth is not alive, but dead. So it was, when Ahab heard that Naboth was dead, that Ahab got up and went down to take possession of the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite. Now, in this case, often I just looked at Jezebel, what she did was wicked, and it was. But I sort of wondered, in her mind, did Naboth actually basically blaspheme the king? I'm not sure how familiar she was with the way that God ordered Israel to divide the land, and this is to remain in the family line. I don't know. And if Ahab did make a fair offer, and Naboth just, no, I won't do it, did she feel that Naboth was very disrespectful, almost close to blaspheming the king? I don't know. I'll give her maybe that much grace. But it does not justify in her actions. And I don't know. She probably had some understanding that the people obeyed Ahab and followed his rule because of fear more than loving him. And so let's put God in the picture that he blasphemed God as well, is sort of the way I read into the story here. But anyway, we see Jezebel is behind this thing of bearing a false witness against Naboth. But the men she directed to do it, we would also say they had a responsibility. They had choices to make. Now, would it have been a fearful thing for them not to listen to what Jezebel was saying? Yes. There might have been some other people implicated and put to death if they would have disobeyed this order. And so it wasn't just a light thing to go against the orders of this wicked queen. However, the law of sowing and reaping took place. When Ahab went down to take possession of the vineyard, he meets up with Elijah. God had sent Elijah down. And the sentence to Ahab was, the place where the dogs licked the blood of Naboth, they will also lick your blood, Ahab. A disgraceful ending. And it says about concerning Jezebel, the Lord also spoke, saying, the dogs shall eat Jezebel by the wall of Jezreel. And not just implicating those two, it says the dogs shall eat whoever belongs to Ahab and dies in the city, and the birds of the air shall eat whoever dies in the field. And so the consequences did not just go to Ahab and Jezebel, but it went to their descendants. A harsh sentence. And so bearing false witness is a serious sin in the eyes of God. Proverbs 18, verse 21 says, death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. The New Living Translation says, those who love to talk will experience the consequences, for the tongue can kill or nourish life. And I like the way the Pennsylvania Dutch Bible said it. It translated would say, those who like to talk will need to eat the fruit of their speech. So what comes out of your mouth, it's going to come back. Proverbs 6:19, it says that a false witness is one of the seven things that the Lord hates. Proverbs 12:22, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord. And so the Old Testament is very clear that bearing false witness, saying lies, are something that the Lord hates, and we should not participate in that. And I don't see anything in the New Testament that changes that position, but rather it is affirmed that we speak truth. We do not speak falsely about people. Looking at the book of James, James chapter 3, talks about the tongue. I don't think I'll take the time to read this passage. The theme of the chapter is about how we use our tongue, and the front several rows. What are some of the illustrations or word pictures that James uses to compare the tongue to? Can you quick pop them off, a few of them? Either side. A few rows, not just the front row.
A fire.
Tongue's like a fire. It can do a lot of damage. Okay, a serpent, you can tame its tongue, but you can't tame your own one. It's what it says.
The rudder on a ship.
And one other one especially. What goes in a horse's mouth?
A bit
in a horse's mouth. So these three things, the bit, the rudder, and a fire when it's little, they're small, but there's a lot of things that get controlled, and a direction is set by the use of these. You know, the bit in a horse's mouth, just a small thing, but by tugging on the rein one way or the other, can change the direction that the horse is going. And the same way with a rudder, steering it, putting it to the side, changes the direction of the whole ship. And in the same way, the way we use our tongue, it steers the direction of our lives. And it talks about the fire especially, about the devastation that can be caused when we use our tongue in a negative way. It's like a forest fire out of control, and there's just a path of devastation left behind. And he clearly says, no man can control his own tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. Pretty straightforward and strong words. And so just by sheer self-effort, we cannot control it. Now, when people do lie and they give a false report or a false witness, is the use of the tongue the root issue? And I would say, no, there's a deeper issue. Why is that stuff coming out of the mouth? In Matthew chapter 12, verses 33 through 37, prior to this, the religious leaders had accused Jesus of casting out demons by the power of Beelzebub. And Jesus gave them just sort of human logic why that doesn't work. A house divided itself can't stand, and so on. And he says that those that speak a word against him, that can be forgiven, but a word speaking against the Spirit will not be forgiven. I'm a little hard time understanding all of that. But then he goes on and says, either make the tree good and its fruit good, or else make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For a tree is known by its fruit. Brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. But I say to you that for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. If we have evil things coming out of our mouths, it's reflecting what's in the heart. And the heart is where the root issue is that we need to deal with. And so, what words are coming out of my mouth? What words are coming out of your mouth? Are they gracious, kind words, or are they critical, lying, and demeaning words? Either one reflects the condition of the heart. Now, when our heart is evil, there are times when we can say good things, but I would say we cannot control it all the time in all situations. We just can't do it. And as was mentioned earlier, in the book of James, some of the root issues why evil things come out of our mouths are because of that envy and the selfish ambitions that we have. But then in contrast to that, James says, this is how the wisdom, how godly wisdom looks. It's peaceable. It's willing to yield. There's no partiality. There's no hypocrisy. It's so opposite of the me-first mentality. And you know, when we have this wisdom from above that is peaceful, willing to yield, no partiality, no hypocrisy, we have nothing to hide. And there is a freedom and a liberty when we don't have to hide. Whenever we start falsely accusing, there's things, secrecies in our heart that we're trying to hide as well. John 3:21 says, "But he who does the truth comes to the light that his deeds may be clearly seen, that they have been done in God." Also like a passage in Psalm 15, where it says, "Lord, who may abide in your tabernacle? Who may dwell in your holy hill? He who walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. He who does not backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up a reproach against his friend." When we do hear about a situation and there is wrongdoing, we can have all the facts straight, and we can tell someone else, and we have all the facts straight. But when we do it outside of the Spirit of Christ, we miss the essence of what truth is. And I think something to that effect was given here a number of years ago on a Wednesday evening that resonated with me. Giving all the facts, having them all correct, does not mean that the essence of truth is contained in them. The essence of truth needs to include giving the information in the Spirit of Christ, because he is truth. So why should we speak truth? Ephesians 4, verse 25 says, "Therefore, putting away lying, let each one of you speak truth with his neighbors, for we are members of one another." And in verse 29, "Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, by whom you were sealed for the day of redemption." And so we are to speak truth because we are members of each other. We're a part of each other. When I hurt and damage someone else, I'm hurting myself as well. When I'm encouraging and lifting up someone else, it helps myself as well. Together, we're part of something bigger than the individual. And so we want to speak to each other in the Spirit of Christ. Colossians 4:6, "Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man." When Christ came to this earth, it says he was full of grace and truth. And we want to be more like Jesus, more like him in it being gracious and being truthful. So what are ways that we can be more careful with our speech? There's in the book Celebration of Discipline by Richard Foster, been reading in there some recently. I think he has something here where he says, "Repetition is a way of regularly channeling the mind in a specific direction, thus ingraining habits of thought." Repetition has received something of a bad name today. It is important, however, to realize that sheer repetition without even understanding what is being repeated does affect the inner mind. Ingrained habits of thought can be formed by repetition alone, thus changing behavior. It is not even important that the person believe what he or she is repeating, only that it be repeated. The inner mind is thus trained and will eventually respond by modifying behavior to conform to the affirmation. This principle has, of course, been known for centuries, but only recently has it received scientific confirmation. And so repeating truths to ourselves can impact how we actually live out that truth, even if we may not completely believe it or understand it. In Romans 12:2, it says, "Be ye transformed by the renewing of the mind." In Ephesians 4:23 is something similar. Be renewed in the spirit of your mind. Now, we would say we cannot work transformation of our heart. That's an act of God. And I would say, yes, I heartily agree with that. It does not come by self-effort. But I would say when we exercise some disciplines, it opens up the way for God to work in our heart, to do the act of transformation. And so one verse that I think would be a good one to repeat every morning if we have trouble with how we use our speech is Psalm 19, verse 14, where it says, "Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer." Try it for a month or so if this is something you're dealing with. Good exercise, even if you're not grappling with it. But just simply repeating those words, consciously thinking, I want my words, I want the meditation, the thoughts of my heart to be acceptable to God today. And when we do that consistently in the morning, sometimes those thoughts will come to our mind during the day in a situation where we realize, oh, maybe I didn't do that. And it allows us to come back to that point again, reminding us to let our speech, to let the words and the thoughts of our hearts be acceptable in the Lord, be acceptable to the Lord. So, I would encourage and recommend that do something, repeat something that helps set the direction of your mind. And it allows God to do his work of transformation in our hearts. And as our hearts are what they should be, there is truth that will come out of our words and out of our lives. I invite you to kneel in prayer. Oh, Father, let the words of our mouths and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. We pray through Christ. Amen.